Hello and welcome to podcast number 10 from the Self-Publishing Formula.
Two writers, one just starting out, the other a bestseller. Join James Blatch and Mark Dawson and their amazing guests as they discuss how you can make a living telling stories. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome to, it's double figures for us, so it's a mini birthday podcast number 10, and we have got a great interview. We should say straight up, shall we, Mark, that we did promise that we were going to do the mailing list episode, but you know what? We had a great chat with Bella Andre, and she's hot at the moment with a fantastic deal that she's just done and a real transitional. It shows the power of self-publishing and what it's worth to the trad publishing industry, and we really wanted to get that interview out. So we're going to go with the Bella Andre interview for this episode, and we will visit the mailing list episode shortly.
Yes, absolutely. No, we had a great chat with Bella, and we couldn't wait to bring it to you. She's been one of the most requested podcast guests that we've had, and we thought it would be wrong of us, remiss of us, to wait any longer to bring it to you. So really looking forward to letting this one play out.
Yeah, we're going to get to it in just a moment. She's great, Bella. But before we do that, I think we should just talk about where we've been today. We've been in a dark basement in Soho in a recording studio in the heart of Medialand in the UK. And we've been busy behind the cameras recording quite a number of videos as part of our extensive test and exploration of YouTube advertising.
We have, yeah. So we've nailed Facebook. That's kind of something we're pretty good at now. And we've done Twitter as well. So the thing that we wanted to look at the first half of this year is YouTube ads. So video is quite hot on Facebook right now. So we've got a lot of video both for the course that we run, and also I've got lots for the video ads that I run to drive subscriptions to my mailing list. And it just seems like a bit of a waste to not try and exploit that content in another, to repurpose it and put it out into another platform. So YouTube is the obvious place to try that. So that's, you've been in the lab, locked up in the lab for a couple of months, trying to test that and see how, if we can get that to work properly.
Yeah, we're in the early stages of finding our way in that. So it uses the Google AdWords platform, which will have you tearing your hair out from time to time. It's not the most intuitive of platforms, but you know, none of these come very naturally. They are systems that you need to learn, but the prize on offer is highly targeted, very effective advertising. So we're determined to crack that for you and report our results. And we should also say that we've done a few sort of longer YouTube style videos, which have been a bit like the podcast. So if for whatever reason you want to see what we look like actually talking rather than just listening to us, you will be able to very shortly on our YouTube channel see us doing exactly this sort of thing in this Soho studio. It felt like we should have been recording a Kinks track or something in there, though, didn't it?
It was atmospheric, and just down the road from a sexual health clinic, and very, very close to where we used to work. So literally, well, 2.5-3 minutes away from Soho Square, which is where both you and me and our the third amigo John worked for, you know, years and years. So it was quite nice to go back and, you know, kind of go back to those streets again.
Definitely our old haunt and the Star Cafe and some famous places just around there. In fact, the sexual health clinic was at one end of the passageway and the sex shop was at the other end, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So
that's some Soho up. Okay, let's get on to this this interview with Bella. A lot of you will know who Bella Andre is. She is an innovator and an early adopter in our sphere of digital marketing. She's sold more than 5 million books. She's had bestsellers around the world. She's been the number one ranked author on Amazon alongside names such as J.K. Rowling, James Patterson and Stephen King. She's got her own publishing company. She's done a lot of things first and a lot of things very well. And she's recently signed a 7-figure print-only deal with Harlequin. And we will talk about that. The power of going to a traditional publisher after you've had success as an indie author is perhaps a pathfinder for the future for lots of authors. So this is Bella. We got going by asking her what she thought had changed in the time that she's been an indie publisher.
Well, you know, I would say it's all been good. I think that people freak out a lot over things. And one thing that you learn like 5-6 years in is stop freaking out and just keep writing your book. You know, that's really what it comes down to is I'll tell you what's the same. What's the same is that your next book is always going to be the best thing you can do. Mm-hmm. Always, always, always. And even with all the opportunities and education that we have with advertising, of which, you know, I'm taking advantage of all of them. We just launched my first Twitter ads yesterday. And so we're watching those and we're going to, you know, tweak and all of that. And of course, you know, advertising on Facebook and, you know, everywhere else and YouTube and Google and everything, doing all of it, right? Mm. Which is super exciting. And I'm super excited to have more tools, but nonetheless, like the most important thing is the book. So for instance, you know, today I started by doing 1500 words on my next Sullivan. And then when those 1500 words were done, I opened the file for my next Maverick Billionaire and I did 3000 words on that. And then when that was done, I pulled out the printout I had done of my Sullivan that's coming out in a month. And I started proofreading that. When I'm done with that, that's when I'm going to go and I'm going to check all my emails and I'm going to go looking at my ads I'm running. I'm going to look at my to-do list and, you know, I've got to format some stuff for Germany, right? You know, there's always everything's layered on top of everything else. But the most important things that I have to do today and every day are get those words in on those next books, because that's ultimately what the readers want. And that's what I want to do too. I got into this to be a writer, you know, not to be an ad specialist, not to be a publisher. And some people will come out of this and kind of realize, you know what? I like writing the least and I want to do all these things more. And then they'll start businesses and they'll do all that. And that's awesome. You know, after 6 years, I'm like, no, I still like writing the best. Like I'm good at everything else, but I really like writing the books. That's where my ultimate passion is. So that's where I'm going to put my hours. So the biggest changes are, I think there's more and more opportunities all the time for writers, and be nimble, like just be ready to roll and be ready to be flexible and just don't freak out. Just stop freaking out.
Yeah, there's been a few bumps on the road.
Look, I mean, that's reality. You know, we're like creative artists, you know, we weep over our keyboards. And, you know, anytime someone, you know, comes and says like, oh, you know, that's the worst book I've ever read, right? Like, you know, look, I have those reviews, 1 star. This is literally the worst book I've ever read, you know? And then, you know, people will agree with that. It's hard. It can be hard to go, you know what? There's thousands or millions of people out there who think these are the best books they've ever read. When that one person says, no, it's the worst. No one's ever going to win that one. You know, it's like, you got to just like keep going and do the best that you can. Like I talk a lot about putting on the blinders, you know, you've got to put them on for a lot of things. You've got to put them on when someone comes in and says they hate your book. You got to put them on when a retailer launches some new program that looks like it's turning everything topsy-turvy. You got to put them on when you're seeing other authors do things around you that you feel like you should jump on that bandwagon, you know, and oh my God, if I don't, you know, drop what I'm doing and start writing that, it's all over. You got to put the blinders on. So there's like that weird balance. You're walking that balance beam between keeping your eyes open and paying attention and being nimble so that when the waves come, you can surf them, and blocking it out so that you can do what you got to do, which is write your book.
Yeah, it's always going to come back to the book, isn't it? Everything else is transitory and things will change. Bezos might get out of bed tomorrow and say, you know what, 40% top royalty.
Sure.
And then he's going to roll with that punch. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is as you say, is getting down and writing the next book. So let's scroll back to the actual, you know, you already made me feel inadequate with your word count. I had a shit day today. I only got like 50 words in the bank. So I feel dreadful and you've made me feel worse. So thanks for that. But how does your day kind of look in terms of when do you get up and start writing and all that kind of stuff?
Well, my day used to look a lot different. And you know what, let's rewind and like, don't feel bad because you know what, here's the other thing is we all have our own natural pace and speed. And I write better when I write more. That's just how I am. Right. But yeah, you know, the first 4.5 years of this for me, you know, I worked almost 24 hours a day and, it was a lot. And I made statements like balance is overrated and, you know, I mean, like it was just all this stuff. And I think in a way, it was very empowering for me. I think, you know, hearing me, you know, especially for people with kids who, you know, are home taking care of them, it can be very empowering to be told, you know what, you don't have to have balance, just go do what you want to do. And so I think that was great for all of us. And then, you know, I got to the point where, you know, I just was like, all right, if I want to keep doing this long term, I got to back off some. So I actually took a few months off and, you know, went to Europe and toured around with my family and pulled the kids out of school. And it was great, because when you have workaholic tendencies like I do, something like that can be kind of the only way that you can break the cycle, so to speak. So I did. Of the 4.5 months we traveled, the first 2.5 months, I sort of was panicked the whole time. And right. You know, I just like to lay it out as honestly as possible. You know, just like, I'm no magician. I'm no more special than anybody else. It's like, stuff's hard. And I had to break the cycle of working really hard, because I would have burned myself out. Unfortunately, I knew to stop before that happened. So yeah, for two and a half months, I panicked, because I was like, oh my God, I'm not working on this 24 hours a day. And what if it all falls away? And what if it all goes away? And you know, you're so convinced once you've done that, that you have to keep doing it at that pace or you'll never be able to keep it going. And what happened instead was, the universe must have said, you know what, cut her some slack. I had the best 4.5 months so far of my career. A friend said to me, you know what, I think this is your sign to take more vacations. So yeah, so I made a promise to myself when I came back that I would not go back into that. And I haven't. So I try to keep it to, you know, I call it cultivating laziness. And my friends say that my definition of laziness is like way off. But for me, you know, working 8 hours a day, you know, trying to keep it to around 8 hours a day, feels like a vacation. It feels really like a pretty light load to me. So that's where I am. So I'm not working, you know, the 20 hours a day anymore. I'm working like probably about 8. Sometimes it spills over a little, trying to steal back my weekends as much as I can. You know, but of course, like, as like right now, I have 3 projects overlapping, not including all the foreign translations and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, there's always a lot of stuff going on, and sometimes they're busier than others. Right now, it's a little bit of a busy month. But yeah, so I get up and actually I go for a walk. I check my email really, really quick, make sure there's no fires. I try to keep that to about 5 minutes. And then I head out for a walk through the vineyards with my husband and our dog. And we walk for like 2 to 3 hours, because I love walking. So I could walk and hike forever. I love it. And then I come back and eat something, and you know, that's it. The headphones go in. I put the same song on repeat, whatever song it is I'm listening to, and I get my words done. And that's it. And then when I am done with that, if I have time, I'll deal with the business stuff as much as I can. And then I try not to work in the evenings anymore. So that's my day. It's pretty simple now. It was a little less simple before, but you know what? Like, I was out conquering the world, and now I'm like, oh, okay, I've conquered a lot. so now I'm conquering it, continuing to conquer it, but just at a more measured pace.
Yeah. All the writers I know are walkers. I love walking and running too. Yeah. I get the best ideas when I'm doing that, but it sounds like you've nailed it. That is a pretty perfect day from my perspective. And I'm hogging you. So, James, any questions?
You've mentioned a couple of times where you will be writing more than one book at once. Is that common for you? Is it just happens to be today and the other time that you mentioned it?
No, it happens sometimes. Right now, the calendar, the carefully plotted out calendar, did not end up remaining as carefully plotted out as it should have. Things shift and change, right? So I do. I have a couple of overlapping projects right now, but fortunately, you know, I'm really enjoying both of them. And so I need to keep them both going. But you know that I wrote a whole bunch of books at 5,000 words a day, a whole bunch of them. And after doing so many of them, I finally just said, you know what, if I want to do that again in the future, that's great. But I don't want to have to do that again in the future. So I'm really careful now about making a schedule where, you know, if there is an overlap like this, it's just over the course of a few weeks. And so I'm in those few weeks right now.
Okay. So it's not a normal thing you plan to do and one that your particular creative approach responds to. It's just something that's happened at the moment.
No, yeah, it's just happened at the moment. I mean, every book is different. Like some books I write completely out of order and some books I write from start to finish and some books I know what I'm going to talk about and some books I don't really know till I finish the first draft and I figure it out when I'm rewriting. I've just realized that I can't pin down a process for myself. You know, sometimes I'll do a 25 page outline and sometimes I'm like, I don't know. Maybe, you know, right? So it's just kind of following it. Wherever the book takes me, I'll just go with it.
Are you writing in Scrivener or Word?
I write in Word and I've done some audio lately, not through Dragon. I hate Dragon. It makes me want to throw my computer through a window. but yeah, where I'll, like in the car a lot, or if I'm on a walk by myself, I'll just sort of speak some stuff and then send it off to a transcription company or my assistant will transcribe it for me and send it back. I find audio a little hard though. There's just so much editing, partly because I'm like, and then he, you know, I can't quite get it out with my voice.
It's a different process, isn't it? It's, writing with a keyboard is a visual process, like for me anyway.
Yeah.
It's tapping into a different part of the brain when to speak it. It's a completely different way of expressing yourself. And I can't get my head around that. It doesn't work for me at all. So I'm going to, you know, end up with repetitive strain injury, I should think.
Oh, I hope not.
All right. So in terms of marketing, I'm very interested in. So looking back at, say, over the course of the last 6 years, if you could pick one tactic that has been indispensable for you, one of the things that's been most consistently good for your, you know, for your, the launches of your book, say, what would it be?
I think it's the relationship I have with my readers is the biggest thing for me. I think they trust me. And one of my biggest things, you know, my soapboxes is the promise to the reader. I will never break my promise to the reader. So that's why for many, many years, really up until the past year, I did not link Lucy, Kevin, and Belle Andre. Because despite the fact that I knew the Belle Andre brand, sticking that onto Lucy, Kevin would make the Lucy, Kevin brand even more successful, I wasn't willing to sell a few more Lucy, Kevin books at the expense of the Belle Andre brand. Mm. And so when I decided to bring the Lucy Kevin books into the Belle Andre brand, I actually did it as a test first. I took one series and I co-branded it and I watched it. I watched it like crazy. And if there had been a sign that I had pissed any Belle Andre readers off, that name and that connection would have come off so fast. You know, it would have been gone instantly. Instead, what I found out was people kept saying to me, "Oh my gosh, it all makes sense now. You're two of my favorite authors." So that was a huge surprise to me, right? Because the promise I was making as Belle Andre and Lucy Kevin were different, at least in the sensuality, because Lucy Kevin books don't have any sex in them and Belle Andre books do. But it turns out that because the voice is the same and the sensibility of how I approach romance is the same, that ultimately that line in the sand for how much sex there is or isn't in the book really didn't matter. So that's everything to me, is the promise to the reader. And of course, like I said earlier, my newsletter list is gold. I'm very, very careful with that list. Try to be very respectful for my fans, for how I contact them. We're very interactive on Facebook and Twitter and Goodreads. I just love them. Like they're why I'm doing this. They're the reason why I can do this. You know, without them, you know, just be writing books and they'd just be sitting on my computer or whatever. But it's so, you know, I owe it all to my fans.
I'm going to ask you about the print deal, which I've trailed ahead a couple of times. So you really found self-publishing. You've excelled at it and it found you in a way as well. And here you are now. And I think this is going to be of interest to some of the guys we have, guys and girls in our Facebook group, who are doing good trade at the moment, starting to make some fairly serious sales. Then the print people come calling and sometimes they're faced with this decision to make about whether they're going to sign over one of their books to print. But you've managed to do this, but keep hold of the self-publishing side of things. Just tell us about how that came about and what the deal consists of.
Well, it was very exciting. I had been publishing my Sullivan series since the summer of 2011. And initially, well, still almost, I was doing 4 books a year in this, in that series. And it took off, you know, beyond my wildest dreams. And so I put out the first five in July of like 2012. I ended up with 3 of those 5 on the New York Times and 3 of those 5 on the USA Today list simultaneously. So it kind of exploded. Like we, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, I'm on K boards. I'm everywhere. You know, I'm like, you know, watching everything all the time. And I'm always seeing people say, you know, when will it take off? When will it take off? And it's like, oh man, just keep going, you know, cause book 5, book 6, there's magic there. So I knew I was going to write at least 8 books in this series. Cause I, you know, gosh, darn it. I was going to hold on for the magic, and the magic really hit at book 5. So that happened. And I obviously had, you know, severed my ties with New York. By then, things were going super well. And a friend of mine had said, because I had been worried when I severed those ties in 2010, I said, oh, what if I ever want to go back to New York? And, you know, I'm the bad girl and they don't want me back. And she goes, ugh. She goes, you know what? Enough with that. She goes, the only thing that matters is your numbers. They will not care that you severed ties if your numbers look good enough later. Well, she was right. So even the publishers that I had left, everybody came and said, we would like to work with you. You know, my God, you're Sullivan's phenomenon. And so I was very clear. And I think this is really what helped me. And I have seen a lot of writers be approached by publishers, you know, like 100, 200, 300 in the last few years. And it can be devastating in a lot of ways. And people sign really bad deals. And it's because, one, they don't feel confident enough to just sort of say, this is what I want. This is what I want. And I'm going to walk if I don't get it. Right. And then they're not sort of confident enough to stand behind that. So, you know, as soon as the publishers came, I was like, I'd be crazy to sell anybody these digital rights. You know, if you want to give me $30 million for them, fine. But barring that, I'm not giving them to you. You can't have them. So I knew I wasn't going to sell any digital. I knew I wasn't going to sell any foreign. I knew I wasn't going to sell any audio. You know, the only thing I was going to do was print. So I ended up connecting with an agent who had been an agent for a friend of mine, a previous agent, but she said, you know what? He's great. He's great at what he does. And I just went to him and I said, you know what? Here's the situation. I think I'm going to be getting these offers. So, you know, if I get them, will you negotiate them? And he was like, I don't know if you'll be getting these offers because nobody gets, you know, print only offers. But if you do, yeah, you know, call me. Let's do it. By that afternoon, I called him and I said, well, we have the first offer. So, so it was, you know, it was exciting. So, what ended up happening was I had actually met the acquiring editor who acquired me from Harlequin at, a presenter's cocktail party for a conference we were at. We were just both on a panel. I think the conference organizers wanted us to duke it out on the panel, you know, what she was supposed to represent traditional and I was supposed to represent independent, and we were supposed to get into a fight. But we really liked each other, you know. I was like, you're cool. And she was like, you're great. And so we hung out that night and she just said, just tell me everything. Like, I'm fascinated by what you're doing. It seems like amazing. So we just talked. And honestly, I was like, we are never going to work together in a million years. So there was no pressure. It was like, I'm not trying to sell you anything. We just got on like, you know, crazy. It was great. So when all of this happened a few months later, she called me and just said, however you want to work together, we're on board. And that was, you know, really it. And so out of everybody who was interested, I chose them. I was very happy with their dedication and devotion to it. We ended up signing contracts for, I don't know, like 15, 16 books across both names, including special hardcover editions. And, you know, they printed and sold gazillions of them. I mean, everywhere people would write me from, you know, a little island in the middle of nowhere and say, there's 3 paperbacks here and here's one of yours. So yeah, it was just really, really great. And, you know, my hat's off to them for trying something really innovative and breaking new ground. But, you know, I just think a lot of it was that I knew what I would and would not do going into it. And I think that if my number one piece of advice to everybody who's in that position is that it's going to be a lot of white noise and it's going to distract you from what it is you need to do. if you can't just go, you cannot wait for someone to make you an offer. If they come to you and say, we're interested, you have to know exactly what your position is. You need to tell them what you want.
That's the old thing. I suppose you're up against people who make deals, two or three deals every day of the week, and you make this one deal for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like me as a tennis player going up to play, I was going to say Pete Sampras or Andre Agassi, because I'm so out of date with tennis, but someone who's modern, Nadal, you know, suddenly playing him in this one match. I mean, because he does it every day of the week. And but there you go. You've got your lines in the sand drawn. Mark's pretty good at this because he used to be a lawyer. So I think he goes into these negotiations well-armed, better than probably the rest of us. But this was really impressive, Bella. You had your line in the sand. You knew what you wanted to do. And this was not a small deal. This was a seven-figure deal. It's been reported anyway.
Yeah.
This was a seven
it was a big, big deal. Yeah. And we signed, you know, we didn't just sign one of them, you know. And you know, and I do want to add, I think it's important for people, you know, to kind of realize that with all the tools that you have out there, you can still do this kind of like, as I would almost say, like the old fashioned way. You know, I never did any advertising at all, you know, apart from, you know, a BookBub here or there, and not even every month, because I wouldn't even like go in and submit every month to them. You know, it was probably like, you know, four or five times a year. Without any advertising. I mean, just going in there, I never discounted my books either up until probably a year and a half ago. Nothing. I did no discounts, no advertising. It honestly was like going out there, writing the books, connecting with fans. That was it. So I think that, you know, when I look at the world now, I recently came back from a conference where they brought in Instagram specialists and Google ad specialists and Facebook specialists. And it was amazing. And it was like the most exciting week ever. And I came out of that and I just felt like, my God, to be able to take, you know, what we can do organically and add all of this to it, it's like winning. I feel like, you know, like winning the lottery right now. Like, we can do so much, but what I caution people, and I'm sure, you know, Mark, that, you know, you say the same thing, you know, you've got your courses, but I'm sure you tell people the same thing. It can be very overwhelming and mm-hmm. it can feel like, oh, if I don't do all of that, I'm never going to get anywhere. So what I always say to people is no, start from the beginning, right? Write your books, go out there and try to put the best cover on it, the best title on it, really think about your brand. Start to communicate with your readers and add things on slowly as you feel that you can handle them. If it gets to be too much, back off. It'll wait. It'll still be there. You know, Facebook's still going to be there. You know, YouTube's still going to be there. Like, you can get on that, but get the foundation. And I firmly believe that having the foundation of the catalog that I have now that I'm able to play with this advertising is a great, great leg up.
Oh man, yeah, I'm just looking at your books page now. It's unbelievable. the amount of content you've got. It's unbelievable. I'm not even going to try and count them, but there must be 50 books.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, you know. And then there's all the languages I'm translating into, and so there's a lot going on. But yeah, and even, you know, and I say that because even I, you know, someone said to me the other day, we were at a conference, and I was sort of lamenting like, oh, I just said, oh my God, I hate formatting translations. I just feel like I don't even know what's on the page in front of me. What if I'm screwing it up? And she said, oh, you don't know how good it makes me feel to know that some things are hard for you too. And I was like, are you kidding? It's all hard. Like sitting down and opening my file and writing that book every day. Oh, it's hard every day. And, you know, getting in there and going and being like, okay, you know, what new ad set are we coming up with now? And how are we targeting it? And, you know, how do we optimize it? And what kind of landing page? It's all hard. It's not like any of it becomes the easiest thing you've ever done. And some parts are easier than others. And hopefully you can find good people to help you and work with you. But, you know, we're all putting in the hours, we're all putting in the time, and some parts of it we like more than others. And you know what? I mean, I just think that's the most honest, helpful thing I feel like I can tell anybody is like, it's hard for all of us. And anybody who tells you otherwise or acts otherwise is totally full of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is hard. It's an amazing time for opportunities, as you've made abundantly clear. But yeah, it is. There's no easy button. Facebook ads aren't going to be the thing that makes the difference. As you said, I think it's where two things. It's loving writing and writing the book, concentrating on the story, and cultivating relationships with fans and readers. That's right. That for me is that's what it breaks down to. And also, I mean, we spoke to Marie Force not too long ago, and Marie and you are kind of duking it out towards the top of the charts in your genre. And Marie's got a pretty big team of 5 or 6 people, I think. And it's actually quite nice to know that you don't. You're doing a lot of this stuff yourself, which is kind of what I still do. So it's 2 different ways of doing things. You know, it's interesting to see how they're both working.
Yeah, I mean, I do, you know, I obviously have a team. She's got a real full-time team, which is great. And my hat's off to her. I don't love having full-time employees. I learned kind of early on, because I'm just a little more seat of my pants. I just don't want to manage anyone. So I have a lot of contractors who work project by project basis for me, and they're great and I adore them. And, you know, I couldn't do it without them. And since I was their first client for a lot of them, you know, they'll drop everything for me, which is great. So I can be a little bit more behind on things, you know, with them, and they'll still go, okay, I can do it for you. I can do it for you. But yeah, you know, again, I like to do my covers. I like to be really, really involved in the process of everything. The one thing I don't do at all anymore, I don't do my own formatting because I hate it. And there's a lot of amazing formatters out there. But, you know, I like to be involved with everything else. I like to be a part of the process because, again, I think that my success in large part has been because I am piloting the ship myself. And I like to keep my hands on the wheel and really kind of keep steering course. And I've found over the past few years that when I take my hands off too much, when I'm not in the trenches getting dirty, things don't go as well. I like to make sure that I have some mud on myself all the time. That's what it is. You may not make the covers yourself, but you know, I'll tell you what, it never hurts to learn how to use, you know, Photoshop or GIMP or whatever you use, right? You may not know, ultimately be the one who sets up your Facebook ads, but you should really be in there mucking around in Ads Manager just so that you can even have coherent conversations about it with the people who are helping you with it. That's really important.
That's really good advice.
Absolutely. I was going to say it's been fantastic to have you on, Bella. I mean, I remember reading a post that you had on Cables when I was starting out. So 4 or 5 years ago now, and I think it was about the print deal, as I recall. And it was really inspiring. And you know, I've kept, you know, a very close eye on what you're doing because you do everything very well, and that's why you're selling so many books. It's been really generous of you to be on with us this evening as we record this. And you know, I hope people have learned as much as me and James have.
Well, thanks. This has been fun.
Bella, it's been a real pleasure, as Mark says. Thank you so much indeed for coming on. And yeah, we're jealous of your lifestyle there in Northern California, but it's been really illuminating talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys.
Bella Andre, she's full of energy. I really got a great vibe from her. Quite also a good approach, I think, to writing and to life. She obviously enjoys nature and enjoys her environment and orders things quite specifically. I mean, like a lot of the people we've talked to, Mark, a bit of a workaholic, but somebody who's able also to switch off and go and do her walks and so on.
Yeah, that's right. I think that is something that comes through talking to hyper-successful indies like Bella and Marie and Russell Blake, people like that. It is a fairly relentless work ethic. I think if you want to kind of crack those really, the 7-figure deals, those kinds of deals, that I think that kind of drive and determination is something that you probably need. But, you know, that's not to say that we can't have amazing careers when we're not prepared to put in those 12-hour days. But it is something that I've noticed that those very successful authors are relentlessly hardworking.
Yeah. And the other thing that's occurring to me is we are moving ourselves into a business that's almost wholly digital. It doesn't really matter where we are. And we keep talking to people who live in amazing parts of the world. I mean, I don't necessarily want to move into Russell Blake's neighborhood in Mexico, though I'd love to visit him there. But amongst the vineyards in Northern California, I mean, that sounds pretty special.
It does, yeah. As we mentioned in the interview, it reminds me and you of that film Sideways.
Yes, yeah.
And there's my favourite quote, which I won't repeat
for fear
of having we'll have the explicit tag slapped on us by iTunes. But basically, don't drink Merlot.
No, parental guidance. We need that tag at some point. Okay, thank you so much indeed for listening to our podcast number 10. We will be back with number 11. We promise you that episode on mailing list, that detail, and we're going to talk about YouTube advertising in more detail, of course, when we've got some results for you. Have a great week, self-publishers. We'll talk to you next Friday.
You've been listening to the Self-Publishing Formula podcast. Visit us at selfpublishingformula.com for more information, show notes, and links on today's topics. You can also sign up for our free video series on using Facebook ads to grow your mailing list. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. We'll see you next time.